And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we're back for another episode of the Startup Hustle. This is your host today, Matt Watson. Today, very excited to be joined by Greg Schmetting. This man I've known for a few years. He's actually the chief sales officer at Fullscale, and he worked with me at Stackify. Today, we're going to be talking about key hires, when to make key hires. Like, Greg was a key hire at Fullscale, so we're going to be talking about when do you make those big hires and things to think about. So before we get started, I do want to remind you today's episode is brought to you by Fullscale, which is my company. We have over 300 software developers in the Philippines doing all sorts of front-end, back-end, mobile, QA, whatever you need help with. You can check us out at fullscale.io. Greg, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, Matt. I'm glad that you consider me a key hire. It's good to know.
You know, you've been a key hire a couple times at my companies, both on the sales side. You know, I guess why don't you give us like the real quick, you know, your background from a sales perspective and, you know, your career real quick.
Absolutely. I would consider myself a bit of an old staffing dog. You know, all my life, all my career, straight out of college, I've been in the staffing industry. Always IT staffing. I've sat probably in every major seat within the staffing world. I've been a recruiter. I've been a salesperson. I've sold solutions. I've been a branch manager. I've been a regional manager. I've been a senior vice president. I've been a COO. And, you know, for a couple times with you, specifically focus on sales, you know, VP of sales, sales, chief sales officer. And so, that's the world I live in. That's the lens I look at things through is, how can we drive more business within the staffing industry, more butts in the seats, so to speak, if you want to say it like that. And a lot of times, I don't necessarily consider myself like a hardcore sales guy. I consider myself a hardcore staffing guy that knows how to execute this business from a sales perspective the very, very best. And a lot of times I look at it not so much from, again, hardcore sales, but it's about solving problems. You know, it's about solving problems for our customers. It's about solving problems for our consultants that we want to try to find great opportunities for. And it's about solving problems, I think, for ourselves and how we can become more efficient at all of those things. And so you a lot of times talk to me about sales and you call me a chief sales officer. And sometimes I'm a little uncomfortable with that because, you know, I'm a problem solver, I feel like.
Well, I think as entrepreneurs and business owners, business leaders, like that is the job, right? Like we should all be problem solvers, and especially if they're problems for customers. Specifically today, I want to talk about a problem that a lot of entrepreneurs have, which is making these key hires, right? So at any company, as the company grows, you get to a point where I need a Greg or I need somebody, whatever it is. And it changes dramatically, right? Somebody's probably listening right now and they're like, oh, I have this business idea, but I don't have a business partner or I don't have a co-founder. Like it starts there. Like the co-founder is almost the key hire, right? And right. Or it could be like, we don't have a CTO. We don't have somebody to help build this thing. So every company at every stage, you know, has a key hire. And even Fullscale's company that's several years old, the 300 employees, we still have key hires. So you know, and I had a conversation today about needing to hire like head of operations and head of HR and like different roles that we still have. And as the company continues to grow, there will be yet other key hires. Like it's a never ending problem for every company.
Absolutely. And you could probably answer this question. Maybe I'll ask you a question is like when you're an entrepreneur or when you're in a startup, that founder or those first two or three people inside that organization have to wear many, many hats, right? You as a founder, you wouldn't consider yourself a sales guy, but you're always selling. So there comes a point when you can't wear every single hat. You got to give that hat over to somebody else and let them take the ball and run with it. And that's one of the things I think I appreciate about you and working with you and for you is that you're in the trenches. You're more than willing to sell when it's time to sell. You're more than willing to, you do the marketing stuff amazingly, right? But you're also willing to say, hey, Greg, you've got the sales ball, go run with it. Go create the policies, go do the right things and go take it to the next level. And so, I do think though that it's important early on, I think in some of these smaller, more startup situations that those key hires can't come too soon. And I think the thing that's perfect for me and full scale and where we are right now is that there's some foundation already there. And that foundation is not bad. I don't know that I would be the perfect from scratch guy for you. But I think I'm a really good, hey, the foundation is kind of there. There might be some cracks in it. It might be a little off level from in places, but go and help us fix that foundation and then build from there. And I think that's important. And you would probably know better than I would. Doing that way too early would be a mistake, especially with a guy like me.
Well, you bring up a bunch of different topics that I want to talk about. And okay. I think one of the most important ones starts with, as a founder, you have to wear a lot of hats, right? Like, especially when you start out, you can't afford to pay a VP of sales, a VP of engineering, a VP of operations, or, you know, every one of these people want to make $200,000 a year, $300,000 a year, whatever. You can't afford to pay all these people, right? So you have to figure out how to wear all these hats. You have to figure out how to do all these things. And then as you go, one of the other traps is, let's say early on you hire a salesperson, right? But the problem is you don't want to make them the VP of sales because they're probably not qualified to be the VP of sales or the chief sales officer. But inevitably, in a lot of startups, that's what happens, right? Like the first software developer you hire, you're like, you're the chief technology officer. It's like, oh my God, why did you do this? They're like, this guy has no experience. We'll never grow with the company. We'll never be the CTO or the VP of sales or whatever it was that you just gave the job title to. Is another trap, right? And then I think the even harder part for a lot of entrepreneurs, and I see this a lot with previous business partners, with friends, people on the show, is the delegating part, right? Like when am I willing to hire somebody and delegate this to somebody else? A good friend of mine has this problem today. Like they just don't trust other people. And if they would just hire like a couple really key people, and then step back and do what they're really good at, the company would probably like triple in size, but they won't delegate. And I'm curious, Greg, if you have you had to drop into any companies, and you can throw me under the bus, where you know you get hired and they bring you in, but then they won't delegate all the stuff to you, and you end up kind of fighting, you know, the business owner.
Honestly, Matt, I don't know that I've experienced that, and maybe I've just been lucky to where I'm fighting the business owner or I'm not being allowed to do my job. But it's certainly a conversation that I've had with multiple friends of mine. And most of my friends are in the staffing industry, right? But multiple friends of mine that are trying to do good work. They're trying to do the job that they were brought in to do. And then ownership is holding them back, or they're trying to make a decision and that decision is being questioned. And they're saying, well, why'd you bring me in if you're not going to let me do these things? And so I think I've been, I guess, fortunate enough in the handful of organizations that I've been in, I haven't really experienced that too much. And I certainly haven't, I guess, experienced that with you. You let me do my thing. And so that's good.
I was happy to get it.
You almost let me do my thing too much because every once in a while, I've learned this, I've been working with you. Because sometimes I'll just be thinking about an idea. I'll be thinking things through. I'll be talking it out. And I'll express it into the universe. And then 2 seconds later, you're running with it. A day later, I'm like, wait a minute, I wasn't ready to do that yet. So I've had to learn when I'm dealing with you, like, be careful what you say, because 24 or 48 hours later, that thing might be real. And so you almost let me do too much.
Well, I think that's the key, though, right, is if you're going to make a key hire, be it a head of sales, a CTO, whatever that person is you've got to hire somebody you trust. If you do not trust this person, yeah, you cannot have them in this position, right? And I've been in this situation a couple times where I've had either a director or a VP or whatever it is that is working for me, that eventually you also lose trust in that person, right? Yeah. And you're like, that is also the moment where, like, this person has got to go. You know, right, if you're going to hire somebody that is going to be in a leadership position, you have to trust them unequivocally at what they do. And you really should be hiring somebody that is better than you at whatever the thing is, right? Like, I hired you because, like, you're the expert at sales and IT staffing, right? Where, for example, if I was hiring a CTO or maybe even a head of marketing at Full Scale, that might be a really freaking hard job, right? Because that is my background and my experience. And so I'm more likely to want to drive the strategy and be involved and maybe micromanage who the person is, you know, what the person's doing and all this. Like, if I was going to hire somebody to do that, it had to be somebody, and this is my point, that I unequivocally trust. Like, if I'm going to hire somebody to do marketing or CTO or a CTO for me, it better be somebody that's really, really good and I really, really trust that I can hand the ball over to and step away. But I think that's one of the hard things as entrepreneurs. You have to figure out, like, what are you really good at? What are you really interested in? And if you're going to hire somebody specifically to do that, those things, that is even harder, because that, if that is your expertise and your specialty, it's harder to give those things up. It's harder to give up that trust, especially if you think it's something that's part of the, like, secret sauce of the company or why the company is going to be successful, is because you work on those things. You know what I mean, Greg?
Well, it is that key to everything, and is surrounding yourself with people that are better than you at things. I mean, that and it takes a level of ego that you got to get your ego out of the way. And I would think that eventually here at Full Scale, you're going to ask me to go out and hire a team or maybe even an army of salespeople. And when I go hire those people, I'm going to go look for people that I think either are better than me right now at selling and have great networks,
yeah,
and have done this job a whole bunch, or that have the potential to be, you know, better than me, you know, after they've been doing it for a while. Because I want my job to be really, really easy. If you consider yourself an A player and then you hire a bunch of C players, your job's going to be hard. You know, I'm going to go hire as many A players as I can and create a winning culture and a winning team. You've talked a little bit about trust today. And I'm curious, from an entrepreneur perspective and people that have been in your chair before, do you consider yourself like a control freak?
You know, when you bet the farm on your company, you invest all the money, you get the loans, you do all the things, you make all the promises. Yeah. As an entrepreneur, you feel like you have all of it on your shoulders, right? And so to some degree, yeah, you want to trust other people, you have to trust other people, but you also have all the weight on your shoulders. You're like, I have to make this thing work. And there might be parts of the business you're like, I'm not going to give this thing up because I feel like I have to control this thing for us to be successful because I bet everything on it. You know what I mean? And so, but it's a double-edged sword, because you might be your own worst enemy, because you're like, you're in the way. You are actually the problem because you won't delegate.
It's that whole idea that you're able to get it to one level, but you're not able to get it to the next level. So you need help around you to do that. But when you talk about making key hires, Matt, isn't that part of what you just said there? Isn't that why it's important to maybe not do it too soon and to make sure that there's a little bit of a foundation in place to grow from? Because if you make that hire too soon, it's not the right time, or it's not the right person, or it's not the right way to bring on those really, really key hires inside of us. A newer organization.
So let's talk about that for a minute. So at Stackify, we hired, which were previous company of mine that I had from like 2012 to 2021. So we hired a head of sales, a guy named Jim, really nice guy, very early on, like within like 12 months or something of the company started. Because I thought like, hey, we built this product. We're going to figure out how to sell this thing. Jim had experience selling enterprise IT software, kind of like you, like, you know, he seemed like the right guy and all that kind of stuff. But we just weren't ready to sell it. Like our product was not ready. We did not really have product market fit. And so I hired Jim, who probably made like 200 grand a year, 250 grand a year, whatever it was. And we weren't really selling anything. Like we hired him too soon.
Okay.
And there was no other team. It was just him. And that was a hard lesson, partly because we just hired him too soon and there was no supporting cast, as you said. And then yeah. I also at one point in time hired a guy named Max as our chief marketing officer, and he was super brilliant. The problem with Max is I bring him in and he's like, where's my marketing team to help me do this stuff? And I'm like, dude, you are the marketing team. You're the CMO. You do everything. And he's like, no, I need a team to help do this and this and this and this. He's like, you know, I do strategy. I do leadership, right? Like I help figure out the big picture and big ideas, but I need people to go implement them. Like people that are experts in, you know, different pieces of marketing. And I'm the guy, you know, that figures out the big stuff. And again, hired him too soon, didn't have the supporting staff, didn't have the supporting cast. And it was ultimately a big mistake, and he just ended up not being the right guy. Brilliant guy, but not in our situation.
Yeah. So that conversation kind of makes me think about a few different things in my past. You get into certain organizations and you kind of do those almost like those personality exams where they tell you, hey, this is what you're good at. This is what you're not good at. You're analytical or not analytical, or you're creative. You know, and one of the things that I've been through, one of those, I can't remember what it was called, but at the end of it, it was like, hey, you get things done with and through people. And so that's always stuck with me a lot. It's like, yeah, I need a team around me. You know, if you had said, hey, I want you to come in here and be a doer only, it probably wouldn't have been a great fit for me. That's not what I'm looking to do. I like to lead and grow and be a part of teams. And so, It kind of makes me think about too, you know, I've been a part of really, really big companies, like global companies. I've been involved in small companies, and my skills and abilities and what I'm able to do, they're the same in both situations, but how I utilize them are different. And so like in a big company, or just a strength that I think I have, is that I can kind of parachute myself into a situation, maybe into an office or a branch or a team or whatever. And I can pretty quickly kind of figure out what the strengths and weaknesses are. Hey, what are some gaps? My spidey senses tell me there's something a little bit off over here. You need to fill in that gap, that sort of thing, especially within the, you know, staff augmentation world.
Sure.
My spidey senses are pretty good.
Was harder at Stackify, right? That was a lot harder at Stackify because it wasn't staffing.
I had zero spidey senses at Stackify, so I'll admit that. But in a small company, I could do those same things. I could go in and I can see gaps. I can see where things need to be fixed, all that good stuff. The difference is in a big company, you know, I can do all of that. I can get some consensus around that problem. I can take that consensus of that group of people, create a small team, and then put a plan in place to fix that. Well, in a really, really small company, that's really, really hard. You know, I'm the one that identifies the problem. I'm the one that creates the solution. I'm the one that implements the solution, and I'm the one that manages it.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, what's been a really, really good fit for me at Full Scale is we're kind of in the middle. You know, I can go and do all those things, but we have enough, we just have enough people, we have enough of a foundation around us that I can go put those little small teams together, put a plan together, and it's not all on me. If that makes sense.
It's not so big. It's not so big that the whole machine is already there, right? There's like, it's not a team of 50 salespeople that is a sort of well-oiled machine and you just fit in and go do your role. it's a small enough team that you can come in and you can make a big influence and make changes and help the team win.
Right. Absolutely. And I think here at Full Scale, what we've done, probably, we've spent here, right? Just been here a few months. And the term that I've used with you quite a bit is just like quarter turns. Hey, we've got all these little things going on. We've got these things that we're doing pretty well. If we give it a quarter turn, we could be doing it really well. And then we can stack those things on top of each other and we can get great momentum and achieve great things. And I think just in the little bit of time that I've been here and I've been here with you, I do think we see that momentum taking up. And it has a lot to do with those little quarter turns that we're all making across the entire organization to make us better. And you know, some of the efforts that you're doing inside of marketing and the way you attack marketing from a staff augmentation perspective is super unique. I've never really seen some of this stuff in action the way that you do it and the way we're doing it, and it's super fun to be around, really exciting. And every day I'm like, oh man, I saw Matt do this little tweak, something happened, and all of a sudden we've got three new leads that we can act upon, and it's super fun, you know.
Well, I think you talk a lot about what's really important with making a key hire and the key hire being successful, right? Like if I was going to hire a CTO, a VP of engineering, a VP of operations, a VP of customer success, whatever it is, I hopefully can bring them in and immediately they can survey the field and figure out, okay, here's where our strengths are. Here's our weaknesses. Here's our opportunities, right? Here's the problems we have. It's like, oh, we actually have these really amazing customer success team that we didn't realize how good they really are, but I can help mentor and coach them to the next level. Or you come in, you're like, no, these people are awful and we're going to have to upgrade the talent, right? Like, but the thing is, like, if you're making that key hire, they need to be able to do that. It shouldn't be like, well, I just hired my buddy who, you know, has worked in sales for a year. Now he's head of sales and bring him in, right? Yeah. Like, the point is, like, you want to bring somebody who comes with a playbook. That was the thing I think Craig Farrell and us always talked about. Like, when you're hiring somebody like this, they better come with the playbook. Like, that's part of the reason you hired them as a key hire and then just promote a salesperson that you already have to be head of sales. I hired you, Greg, because you had the playbook. You knew how to do this. You had done this for 25 years. So when you come in, plug you in, I'm bringing the playbook. Come in, run the show. How do we do this thing? Where are all the quarter turns? Let's go make the quarter turns and let's go win, right? Like that was the key to me, was the playbook.
Well, I don't think that playbook's very fancy, but I think it's effective. And I know how to run it. So I'll admit that. You bring something up to it, and I can think back, you know, over the years, because I've interviewed a lot of people and I've hired a lot of people into higher level roles, middle management roles, leadership roles. It might be at a branch level or whatever, in different organizations. So I've interviewed a lot of people. And the one thing that always frustrated me the most was when somebody would be sitting across from me and I was interviewing them. And they might have, you know, 10 or 15 years experience in the industry. And I would try to get them into a conversation where they were articulating their philosophy on the business. And they couldn't give me anything. And I'd be like, you gotta have some sort of a belief. You've got to have some sort of an opinion about what the right way to do this business is. And if they were just, you know, a pile of mush that knew how to do the business, but didn't have an opinion on the right philosophy and the right strategy, I'm like, how can you do this job for 15 years and not be able to articulate that to me? And I never hired those people.
Yeah. Well, so part of the challenge when you are an early stage company, you don't have a big budget, right? Like as we talked, you can't spend $200,000, $300,000 a year to hire some VP that worked at this big company that has all the experience, has all the network, has all the playbook, right? You can't afford to do it. So we were really lucky at Stackify to hire two or three people that were more, say, at a director level that we had to almost make a bet on. And a great example of this was Megan that worked for us. And, you know, she was actually, when we first hired her, she was, I think, a teacher at a IT school. And we brought her in and had her doing customer success for us. And then eventually she was doing director of customer success and then eventually VP of customer success. But the point is, like, you almost have to find people that are kind of on the cusp of it. You're like, you know what? I think this person could be a really good director, VP, and I'm going to have to make a bet on them a little bit to kind of help grow them. But maybe I can hire them for, say, $100,000 a year instead of the VP with the experience and the playbook that comes in for $200,000 plus a year, right? Like, that's part of the other struggle as a founder is you have to figure out, where do I make those bets? You're like, well, maybe I could, you know, hire this person and they'll be good enough and they'll be okay, versus other places you're like, no, I need like the expert help. Even if I have to pay, you know, big money for this role, I've got to pay big money for this role. Does that make sense, Greg?
Absolutely. And I think that super important, and that's a play that's been run since the beginning of time, is being able to look out, find, attract, talk to, recruit, that person that might be in an organization that's like one level below what you're trying to hire into, and they're not getting that opportunity.
Right.
They're being held back. Somebody's not seeing it. And you got to be able to, can you recognize greatness in that person? Where, hey, I recognize something that somebody else doesn't recognize. I can breathe new life into that person. I can grow that person. Let's give them a chance. I'll bet on them and they're going to win for me, whereas somebody else isn't giving them that chance. So I think that's a play that's been run since the beginning of the time. But it's just hard to recognize. You got to be good at recognizing that. And it's a skill.
An entrepreneur, you know, founder, and you're like, hey, I don't have anybody that works for me in marketing. How do I even hire a director of marketing or a VP of marketing? How do I hire somebody I can trust to do this? Like, that's its own hard problem, right? Especially when you're like, I got to hire like four or five people across all these different disciplines.
Yeah.
It's hard. Yeah. It's just hard to even interview them and figure out, are they going to be good at the job?
How many of the hires that you made inside your organizations have been like within your personal network or based on referrals? Or how often have you maybe used an outside agency? Or how many times have you posted a position and waiting for people to come back to you? I'm guessing that much of your success has been based on your personal network or referrals.
You know, as I think back over time, I don't think I ever did like executive recruiting at Stackify, like to hire somebody like you. I didn't use like a high level like executive recruiter for that kind of stuff. I don't think I ever have in my career, actually. I've only used recruiters for hiring like a software developer. Not really like executive leadership position.
Well, I think too, you know, if you want to take the conversation back to a little bit about making key hires and when to do that. And I think about the situation that maybe we're in at Full Scale right now and what we're trying to get to 6 months from now, a year from now, 3 years from now, whatever the case may be. I think if you tried to scale up, especially on the sales side, and go and hire a small team to a small army of people without having a strategy in place, the right processes in place, the right vocabulary in place, the right culture in place. You have to, if you can look into the future and say, I need to hire 10 people to create this team. And if I did it under the current situation that we're in right now, it would be a disaster. You got to hire somebody to help you get there.
Yeah. So, well, I think one of the most important things as a entrepreneur is understanding kind of your role. If you're more of the operations person, or are you more the visionary, big picture CEO type of person? And there's a great book called Rocket Fuel. I forget who wrote the book that's about this. It's about the relationship between the CEO and the chief operating officer. And actually, it was Craig Farrell that recommended that I read this book, and I don't read books, but when Craig came to me one day, he's like, Matt, you need to read this book. I was like, oh man, what did I do wrong? Why do I need to read this book? But it was kind of a eye-opener for me, because as an entrepreneur, you know, like you said earlier, you come to me and you give me an idea, and the next day I'm like, hey, let's do it. Let's go do this idea. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. That doesn't work well in most companies, right? Like, you can't constantly have like a new idea every day and doing this and doing that. Like, it's too chaotic. Now, for an early stage company, it's a little bit of a superpower, right? Because like you can move quickly and you figure out what works and whatever. But it can also be very disastrous, right? Especially if you just kind of have ADHD and you're all over the place and you're like, Greg, yesterday I told you to do this. Why aren't we doing this? But now, Greg, do that instead. Forget what I told you yesterday. Yeah, I know we haven't had enough time for that to be successful. Don't care. Doing something else, right? Like, you can't be all over the place. And one of the things that Craig, you know, really talked to me about was like, you know, Matt, you come up with the ideas. I'm your sounding board. You know, part of the reason you hired me as a key hire, as the chief operating officer, is to be that sounding board. Let's work through what the ideas are. So instead of you running to everybody in the company with all these ideas every day, walking around the office, let's talk about it, bounce them off idea, bounce them off of me, and then I can help execute the good ones, right? And right. I can be the buffer between the rest of the company. So I really recommend that book, Rocket Fuel. And if somebody's listening, they're like, oh yeah, I'm that guy. I'm the person that has all the ideas. I'm driving everybody crazy. I really recommend that. Like, you need like that, you know, second person, that right-hand man that is the chief operating officer. That is somebody that's more tried and true, steady, you know, running the race, more operational. You're kind of crazy all over the place, which is great. That's a superpower as an entrepreneur, but you need to partner with somebody that can kind of anchor you down a little bit and go execute those plays.
I think there's another book out there that's very similar to that. I think it's called Second in Command, that talks about a lot of the stuff that you were just talking about there. And one of the things that, you know, talking a little bit about Craig right now, which is interesting. I'll talk about Craig all day. I'm that guy. I always like him. He talked about the rule of 90, you know, and he kind of taught me the rule of 90. And it's different. It's 90 seconds, 90 minutes, 90 hours. But at the end of it is 90 days. And it's about how important it is to when you're instituting a new initiative, when you're trying a new strategy, when you're trying a new play, to run a new play, you know, that it needs to have time to live and breathe. And 90 days is a good rule of thumb, because that's how long it takes to create a habit, you know. And so I'm kind of, and I came to you today. It's funny that we're talking about that. I came to you today. I'm like, hey, we're getting close to the end of my 90 days here. And I'm starting to think about the things that we need to be doing next. And so I think that rule of 90 is always a good one to think about.
So tell us a little more about your last 90 days. So we hired you as a key hire. You started the first week of January 2024, full scale. You're the chief sales officer. You know, you have an IT staffing background, but what we do at Full Scale is a little different with offshore development, staff augmentation, a little different, not a lot different, a little different. But I'm curious, like, what have been like the you know, the ups and the downs of that? Like, you get dropped in, you're like, hey, you're in charge of sales, go.
I think for one, it's been more ups than downs. It's been really, really fun the last 90 days. I think we've seen a lot of success. One of the things about Full Scale and the offshore business that we do compared to the more traditional US-based staffing that I've done historically is I would say that there's a lot more similarities than differences in the business. I think the absolute biggest difference is just the location of the resources, you know, where we have 300 resources in the Philippines. You know, it's been a lot of fun for me. One of the differences that I think has been is that the business moves lightning fast compared to US-based kind of onshore staffing. So that's that pace of the business or the operating is the operating rhythm of the business has been really, really fun. But you know, for me, you know, I kind of always kind of try to break it down to like three different things and really take it easy, slow down, you know, learn, ask a lot of questions, talk to a lot of people, absorb when I can. But as quickly as I can, I'm going to try to create process hey, what's our process? What's our standard operating procedure? What is it that we can make repeatable around here that we can do over and over and over again? And I think part of that is also creating a vocabulary. I'm always kind of surprised at how many places that I come into that don't have like a uniform vocabulary about how we're doing business. So try to speak to the business exactly the same way over and over and over again. And then the last one, which is the hardest one, is just create culture. You know, create a sales culture, create a culture of winning, create a culture of account breakers. You know, culture is a word that's used a lot, and it's hard to define and it's hard to build, but just at least try to have an eye on that sort of thing. And what's our culture and how are we going to create that? What are we like within the sales team? So I think hopefully you've seen me do those things as far as my time here of really working on our process, defining our process, defining our vocabulary, and then creating a culture.
Have there been any instances where things haven't quite went the way you wanted them to go or thought they would go, or you didn't get the support you needed, or things have been a challenge? Like, have there been any negatives in the last 90 days, or it's all been rainbows and unicorns and sunshine?
It's been mostly rainbows and unicorns. It really has. I'm having a blast. And I think you see that from me every single day. I think just trying to kind of, especially when we're dealing with offshore stuff, it's my first time dealing with the time change and maybe the cultural difference. And just being able to, what's the operating rhythm of communicating? Is it via Slack or whatever the case may be, very obviously very virtual, but just trying to figure out how do I fit into that? How do I turn this ship maybe over there slowly without being a bull in a china closet and being very mindful and respectful of the fact that they don't know me the way you know me, and that you know, I want to do the job really, really well. So I think maybe that's been the hardest part for me to maybe get my arms around, is just the offshore component and how I fit in and how I have the most positive impact. You know, I'm working with the sales team here. I can have a positive impact every single day. If I feel like I'm not, I'll pick up the phone and try to have a positive impact. But how do I do that from a 1,000 miles away? It's been harder than I suspected.
Well, I really appreciate having you do this today, Greg. Talking about key hires, and I think we covered a lot of great topics about key hires. I wrote a blog on my blog. So my blog is at visionaryCTO.com. For those who are listening, you don't subscribe to my blog. I wrote a blog one day titled "Why I Could Never Be a VP of Engineering," and I think one of my key takeaways is being honest about what you're good at, what you're not good at, what you want to do, what you don't want to do, what you want to delegate. And I wrote this blog post about why I could never be a VP of engineering, because like I just don't really enjoy managing people or process. I'm more of a strategy, big picture, innovative kind of person. Like managing people and process is just not really my thing, which means I really need a good VP of engineering that would do that. But I think the key is like realizing what you're good at, what you're not good at, I think is super critical. I think is my key takeaway for this today. And Greg, do you have any final thoughts, any final words of wisdom?
My final words for wisdom, well, you caught me off guard with that one. I would say the thing that I try to stay focused on from time to time and remind myself about, you know, doing this business or any business and trying to build successful teams is really the idea of not always just focusing on the end result. And I think that can happen a lot. As we focus on the end result, we often celebrate the win. We focus on the losses, but we don't always necessarily focus on how we got there and the little things it takes to get to those wins or those losses. The idea of focusing on the root, not just the fruit, and making sure that your root is strong, that you water that root, that you make it strong. And if you do that, a fruit will be there. But if you just focus on the fruit and don't tend to the root, that your fruit will wither and die. And so celebrating the small wins along the way, creating a process that can ultimately lead to those wins, I think it is super important. And I think people forget about that. And I think it can happen in small companies as well, because those wins are so, so freaking important, right? And so I think, taking a step back and say, how did we get that win? And how can we repeat that? And, what was the steps along the way that we should also celebrate those little things along the way? I think that's what I would maybe leave as my last thought with you.
All right. Well, thank you so much for doing this, Greg. Again, today's episode is brought to you by Fullscale, which is our company. If you need help growing your development team, front end, back end, all the programming languages, all of it, check us out at fullscale.io. Greg, thank you so much for doing this today.
Thanks, Matt.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.